On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. More than ever, parents today feel the pressure to give their child a distinctive name. It's not like half a century ago when a quarter of all American children were given one of the then top 10 names, Mary, Susan, Michael, James. Now new names are all over the place. Zayden and Cadence, Darius and Destiny. This hour on Point, how we pick names and what those names tell us. Joining me now in the studio is Laura Wattenberg. She's author of The Baby Name Wizard and creator of the online Name Voyager, which tracks the popularity of baby names across time. Laura Wattenberg, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Pleased to be here.
There's so much we're going to talk about in this hour, but first, just tell us the very, very latest, and we know you're on top of it. What is hot and what is not right now, on this day?
Right now, across America and across the world, the hottest trend in baby names is to be as little like your neighbors as possible. The problem is that while we all want to be distinctive today, we all want to be unique, our tastes are really every bit as much alike as they ever were. And so you see parents really struggling to find that balance between what stands out and what fits in.
What are some names that take us out to that frontier where parents are doing their darndest to give their kid a name that will be absolutely distinctive?
Well, you mentioned one just a moment ago, Zayden. Zayden is a hot new name in the top 1,000 boys' names in America.
Zayden, how would you spell that?
Well, you just pretty much have your choice. The most popular spelling is Z-A-Y-D-E-N, but it's a brand new name. You can spell it however you like, and you can spell Brayden, Hayden, Jaden, Caden, and Aiden also any way you like.
Does Zayden come from somewhere? The Bible, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the cuneiform tablets?
Most of the new names don't come from somewhere, or perhaps they have a link in our culture. So Jaden, for instance, you can link to an obscure name in the Bible. But the most important thing is that Aiden sound, which is the hottest sound for boys, perhaps the trendiest sound that has ever existed for American boys.
And what about girls? What's hot off the griddle these days and out there on the distinctive front?
For girls' names, we're moving in two different directions. The first is androgyny. Now, in terms of baby names, androgyny means a move to the masculine.
And you don't mean giving a baby that name, Androgyny Jones.
No, I have yet to meet a girl named Androgyny, but you do
just
certainly. Addison is perhaps the fastest rising girl's name in America.
Androgynous because a boy could use it just as well.
And because a generation ago, an Addison would have sounded firmly masculine.
Mm-hmm.
Today, parents think that perhaps it's an advantage to girls to look androgynous on paper.
What else falls in that category?
Addison is a new twist on the popular name Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the presidential surnames, like Madison, are starting to flip over. So Reagan, for instance, especially in conservative communities, is a popular name for girls.
For a girl. Okay. And what else? I mean, have we got, Teddy up there for girls yet? Or
we don't do the nicknames. Actually, parents try to hedge their bets. So if you look at a name like Madison or Addison, the full name sounds androgynous and formal, but the nickname, Maddie and Addie, it actually contracts to a traditional girlish sound for a little girl.
So on paper, there's a kind of masculine aura around a girl's name. But at home, when you're calling out, it's Maddie or Addie or who knows, maybe one day Teddy. Wow. Why is it that Americans, do you think, are looking for that unique name for their children? And what's the evidence that that's true, like in the numbers and the statistics of how names are arrayed these days?
In terms of the numbers, you hear a lot of reports today of the number one name in America. So the number one names for boys and girls are Jacob and Emily. But number one is not what it used to be. If you take a look at the percentages, the number one names today are just a tiny fraction as popular as John and Mary once were. The entire curve is flattening.
So instead of having, a handful, 10, a dozen names that are so predominant, we've got names all over, 1,000 names that are in play? Or
you're much less likely to meet another child with the same name today. But as in the case of Zayden and Hayden and Jaden, that doesn't mean that we're really finding uniqueness. What we're finding is entire generational sounds, a whole rhyming classroom of kids, as parents try to come up with something new, but are still a little bit afraid to make their child sound weird.
You've got this kind of amazing website.
Name Voyager.
The Name Voyager. All right. I've got it up right here right now. We can type in a name, you know, clack, 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 clack. I put in John, and it shows me the popularity of John over time. It's kind of a great big fever line where I go back to the 1880s, and this John was just the total top of the pops. Oh, poor John. It's just gone down and down and down. A little spike in the 40s and early 50s, and now John almost off the chart. I mean, in the negative, in the down direction.
John is a name that held steady, not just for generations, but for centuries. There was a time in England when literally a quarter of all babies born were named either John or Mary. But what's happened in the last 20 to 30 years is the more ordinary a name sounds, the more common it sounds, the more parents are running away from it.
Okay, I type in Destiny. Here I've got it. And here, Destiny, it looks to me that in 1968, maybe, nobody had it. And now Destiny is way up there. In the 90s, Destiny just rose, well, like the Dow Jones.
Destiny actually crossed with Mary at some point. So more American girls are now being named Destiny than the ultimate classic girl's name, Mary. In the search for something new, we're actually becoming, again, more and more alike.
What is that search? I mean, they want uniqueness. Let's just look at that first of all. How do you interpret that urge to be unique? Why was it important to be part of the crowd 100 years ago? And now, whether they succeed in getting it or not, the parents trying again and again to have their child stand apart from the crowd with his or her name.
If you look at the story told by the baby by baby names, our impression of conformity in America is actually borne out quite well, that the 1950s were the peak of conformity in terms of the top 25 names representing a large percentage of all kids. That has fallen since the 1960s as the age of individualism has come into play. There's an assumption that being unique, being an individual, is a value. But in the last decade in particular, we're seeing an additional force, which is technology. As media outlets have expanded, we hear more names every day. And as we live more of our life online, we're more used to the idea of a name as a unique identifier.
Meaning, for example, if I'm going to type my name into Google, I want to have a name that's going to pull my personal needle out of the haystack rather than 1,000 other Tom, Dick, and Harrys or whatever the counterpart is today?
A remarkable number of parents today are looking to Google and are searching Google for a baby name to try to make sure that their child is unique. This certainly has its benefits in terms of myself as an author. I'm the only Laura Wattenberg I know of, and that makes me easy to find online.
Type my name, you get me in your case.
Exactly. But at the same time, there is a real downside that people aren't thinking about in uniqueness, which is a loss of privacy. Kids growing up today...
Google you and I'll have you.
Exactly. You leave digital footprints from the time you're a small child, and a future employer, if you have a unique name, will be able to see your entire life on screen.
And then there's some of the reason for the urge for uniqueness. When parents try to find something unique, what do you feel as the drivers pushing them in this way or that? What's the kind of cultural, wind that they're caught by? Are there certain thematic or historical or, I don't even, geographical or phonetic elements in common to their search for that unique thing?
Parents all want to be distinctive, but the way you search for that depends on who you are and your community. Mm. So there are some communities where parents feel perfectly happy making up a name. They'll just string together attractive sounds.
Like?
For instance, Zayden. That is a example.
Yep, yep.
And all of these rhyming names are a sign that we're just looking at sounds. In other communities, particularly with older and more educated parents, mm-hmm. there's a desire for tradition at the same time as a gut instinct that you want to be unusual and you want to stand out. So their parents are looking back in time, and you might find children named Silas or Amelia.
Silas. Let's see what's going on with that. Silas. Right. I'm looking on the website again here. Huge in 1880, Nowheresville in the 1960s and 70s, and now in 2006, a real kind of comeback for Silas.
Even names that a generation ago would have been unthinkable, we're pushing the boundary a little bit farther every day. So Old Testament names came back into fashion. fine, we start with Jacob and Hannah. That's easy. But those names don't stand out anymore. Now you see names like Ezekiel coming back into fashion.
I mean, people looking back at which book is it, Numbers, that has so many names because it's everybody who worked on rebuilding the walls of the temple in Jerusalem?
The Bible has an extraordinary number of boys' names, at least. For girls' names, it's harder going.
Boy, you get in there, though, you want Zakur, Meramoth, Uriah, Joida. Well, then there's Jaden, which they sound weird, but then the next thing you know, the kid next door has got that name, and it doesn't sound odd at all.
And that's where you see the intersection of what we think of as our values, what we think of as drives us, and our sense of fashion. We might like Jaden because we think it's a biblical name, but really it's the sound that draws us toward it.
Did you get into names because you were naming your own children?
I did. Like so many parents, I was stuck for a name. But what happened when I was naming my children is that there was new information available. Traditionally, if you think of a baby name book, you picture a dictionary of meanings and origins that tells you where the name came from in old High German.
I've been joined by Laura Wattenberg. She's author of The Baby Name Wizard. If you want to see when your name was most popular, up, down, and in between, you can go to her website, babynamewizard.com, or link to it through ours, onpointradio.org. Let's go to our callers. We've got a lot who want to get into this conversation. Hampton, Virginia, Matt is calling. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
We're good. Matt, let me just start with your name. I've got it typed in here. Did you know that your name peaked in popularity in, looks to me like, about 1989, and man, you're really on the downswing now?
I'm not surprised. Growing up, I was always a little concerned with the responsibility that came with the biblical nature of it, and swore my whole life that I would change it when I got of age, but I guess it's growing on me.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you're Matthew right in the middle of it. What about your own kids, Matt?
Yes, I was looking for something really unique and symbolic, and couldn't quite convince my wife of Summer Rainbow, but did get her settled on Summer Dawn.
Summer Dawn, with Summer as the first name and Dawn as the middle name?
Yes, sir. For the beginning of the height of life, and for the sake of uniqueness, but have met at least 10 other Summer Dawns now.
You're kidding me. So in your own town or around the country, or Googling them up?
No, in personal experiences. Between the pediatrician and my best friend's ex-girlfriend, apparently, was Summer Dawn.
That's amazing. How old is your daughter, Summer Dawn, now, Matt?
Three and a half.
So she doesn't know yet whether or not she likes this name.
I think she already is beginning to enjoy it because she sees it everywhere on merchandise and on billboards. And even though it's usually talking about the season, she connects it with her name, and so I think she enjoys it.
It's a beautiful name. Laura, what about Matt's experience? He goes out there, names his daughter Summer Dawn. Now he knows 10 Summer Dawns.
Summer is actually part of a long American tradition of naming our daughters after the warm and sunny parts of the year. It used to be that we would name after months, so we have had waves of first May, then June, then April. We ran out of the pretty months, and we started naming our daughters Summer and Autumn.
Right, and Summer Dawn, the combo, and running into others with that. I mean, it would seem, okay, Dawn's also been a name for a while, but still the combination seems like something you wouldn't find just every day, and yet Matt now runs into it.
It is a natural combination when you think of the meaning of the words, the gentleness, but also the fact that Dawn is one syllable. There's a real lack of one-syllable girls' names, and names like Rose and Grace are really disproportionately used as middle names.
But Grace really coming back now as a first name, I believe.
Grace is a very popular first name, but even more popular as a middle name.
Let's go to Ernest in Keysville, New York. Ernest, you're on the air.
Thank you for having me. Great show.
Thanks, Ernest. Let me tell you right off the bat, if I may, forgive my intervention, but I've just typed your name in. Can you guess when your name peaked in popularity, Ernest, in this country?
Say the late 60s?
Actually, 1889.
Zounds. Well, that would stand to reason. I am a fourth. I'm part four of Ernest.
Oh, okay. So it's come down. Maybe that name was practically born at the height of its popularity.
Probably.
What about you and your kids?
I'm sorry?
What about you and your kids?
Okay. Well, I wish I had a dime for every time when I was growing up I heard Ernie, where's Bert? And I'd be a very wealthy man right now. But my daughter, she's 9 months old, and when we were deciding on names, one of the requisites was my fiance and I, we had to have never met somebody with that name. Thus, her name is Pearl. And she has two middle names, Susan, named after her grandmother, and Townsend, named after Pete Townsend from The Who.
Great. So
if she doesn't like Pearl, she can always go with Susan or Townsend.
Right, so she's got it all. She's got the traditional name, she's got the androgynous kind of surname name, Townsend, and she's got Pearl. How's she like it? She's, you say, how many months old or years?
9 months.
Oh, she has no idea yet. Are you any buyer's remorse here? Are you happy with Pearl?
I love it. It's great.
Laura Wattenberg, interpret this decision, this choice.
Pearl is a great choice that hasn't been rediscovered, whereas Ruby and Lily and a lot of those other Victorian names have.
I'm looking at your chart here again at babynamewizard.com, and Pearl peaked just a little bit after Ernest, way back in maybe the 1890s. It's still Nowheresville on the chart. So Ernest chose well if he wanted uniqueness right now.
Ernest definitely is looking to the future there, but he's also doing something that a lot of us do to find a unique name that doesn't feel too familiar to us. Our own generation of names is ordinary, our parents' generation sounds boring, grandparents sound old, but our great-grandparents, like Pearl, start to sound fresh again.
What becomes cool once it's no longer associated with our parents or with gray age?
In essence, anyone we've ever met as a young person, that name seems ordinary. So we all look back 3 to 4 generations, and names start to cycle back after about 90 or 100 years.
When I look down here at the Social Security Administration's top 10 names of 2006, and of course their step in the late 90s of starting to put these out had a lot to do with understanding what was going on out there. There's a lot of sort of throwback and antique names here. Emily, Emma, Madison kind of cuts both ways. Isabella, Abigail, Olivia, Hannah, Sophia, Samantha, I'm not sure, and another one, Ava, but a lot in there that sound like 19th century names to me.
The interesting thing about names like Olivia and Ava, which you mentioned, is they do sound to all of us like antique names. But if you actually look at the historical trends, those names were very uncommon 100 years ago. They're what I call a forged antique that looks to us like it's old-fashioned, but in fact it was quite uncommon. The real antique name was Olive, not Olivia.
What? No kidding. I'm looking here at Olivia, and it looks more like, you're right, it's not like Olive, it's more like Olivia Newton-John. It really takes off in the 1970s, 80s.
So we're listening to our ears as well as looking back into history. Olivia has the vowels that we love today. We don't like consonant sounds. And because it was uncommon when we were kids, it sounds fresh.
Don't like consonant sounds. So things with too many consonants. Gertrude has a lot of consonants in
Gertrude,
it.
Gertrude, Mildred, all of the Germanic names that were the height of fashion in the 1900s. Today, they're not even used in Germany.
But that consonant sound at the end, N, which now is predominant, speaking of Germany, sort of uber alles here. I mean, every name seems to end in N. It's never been more dominant. Why that consonant now, do you think?
There's a real phenomenon happening, especially for boys. A lot of the style of a name, the fashion of it, is carried at the end. So Michelle and Danielle, for instance, or Harold and Ronald have a similar feel. Today, boys are coalescing around the letter N. More than a third of American boys born this year will have a name ending in N.
That is amazing. Is it possible to make some cultural interpretation of that? Is it I don't know. Is it a comforting sound? Is it? Are we in psychobabble right away, or can you say something about how N intersects with our moment?
The letter N in particular is probably just a reflection that it's different from what's come before. That 50 years ago, names ending in hard vowels, Mark, for instance, would have been a fashionable name. Today, parents are looking for something fresh for boys, but particularly for boys, we still have a conservative bent. We're still very nervous about our boys sounding silly. So we make 100 tiny variations on a theme. If we want a biblical name that was uncommon a time ago, we choose Nathan or Ethan instead of Zechariah.
So the N at the end of those keeps us anchored in while the front of it gets us out of new territory. Boy, I feel just part of the herd, all three of my kids ending in N. And we thought we were creative. Let's go to Meredith in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Meredith, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
As you said, I'm Meredith, and I think my parents did a fantastic job naming their only child because it's feminine, recognizably feminine without sounding diminutive, and yet it's not that common.
Let me make a guess here from this chart, if I may, Meredith, of when you were born. Of course, I can hear it. This is maybe fish in a barrel. But you were born between 1980 and 1990. Am I right?
Both. I was in December of 79.
Whoops. Okay. I should have taken it back. Yeah, that shows up on the chart as well. You got a huge spike of Meredith booming up at the end of the 1960s right through just a couple of years ago. And you like it because it's what again?
Because it's recognizably feminine, at least in America. Yep. I lived in the UK for a little while, and they said, what kind of name is that? Because traditionally in Wales, it's a boy's name.
Meredith as a boy's name in Wales. And has it got enough femininity, masculinity, or is that how you weigh it, or something else?
No, I like the femininity of it. You know, people know if they see my name on paper that I'm a girl, but it doesn't sound diminutive. You know, it doesn't have a boy's name with a feminine ending on it. You know, it is what it is and doesn't look like any other name. But I hate that nobody can spell it.
What, no one can spell Meredith? I would have thought that was fairly traditional.
Yeah, you would think, but they always switch an E and an I somewhere. If they're lucky, they get all the vowels in there, just not in the right order.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I always said that, you know, when I have a child, I'm going to give them a name that's hopefully unique but self-explanatory.
That can be a challenge, I would guess. Meredith, thanks for that call. Let's get another call on maybe a similar theme. Caroline is calling from Potsdam, New York. Hi, Caroline, you're on the air.
Hi, and it's Caroline, and I have had to fight for that spelling all of my life.
Okay, so we're typing you in. Let's just get a read on you first. Let's see, your name was incredibly popular at the end of the 19th century. It was Nowheresville in 1950, and then back like gangbusters in the 90s and in recent years, Caroline. What
right.
do you think?
Well, I was born during Camelot, so a lot of people think I was named for the president's daughter.
Okay.
However, I was not. My great-grandmother was Caroline.
But there was a little spike there in Caroline during the Kennedy presidency, it looks like, on the chart. But you've got a family name going. What do you see when you look at how people are naming their kids these days?
Well, as I told the screener when I called your show, I find it quite odd that people name their children after states. Dakota
sure.
is quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
I do work in a hospital, and I see baby names quite often. And they either name them after states, or they take beautiful names and put different letters in.
You mean re-spell an old name?
Re-spell an old name, and it's like, what is this?
Such as?
Using Michelle with an S, Leah with two E's.
Well, let me ask you about that. First of all, Michelle with an S. I mean, it's pretty. It's pretty to look at, but it does mean a lifetime of their daughter saying, that's Michelle with an S.
Yeah, and you always wonder if it's a typo or something.
And what's your problem with state names? Dakota, I'm looking at here, nobody named that in the 1970s.
Really? I know.
Starting in 1990, it took off like a rocket. Huge.
Yeah, and I don't know why.
Laura, what do you say about the spellings and geography coming into play, your state names, for example?
In terms of the spellings, this is definitely a tough time for the folks who make the little vanity license plates for kids' tricycles. It's very hard to find your name today on those lists because spellings have exploded. It's another way that parents are trying to stand out but fit in, have their child be a little easier to find online, perhaps, have something unique, but yet their tastes are the same as they ever were. In terms of state names, Dakota, I think, is chosen as much as a Native American tribe as it is as a state. If you want to find state names in American history, look back in the 1880s, 1890s, you'll find kids named Tennessee and Alabama.
All the way back then. So is it sort of a leaning into the historical aura, the luster? Does Dakota what bring to mind Native Americans, Wild West, open spaces? Is that what you think parents are reaching for?
Dakota definitely has that Western aura, and you see names like Cody and Cheyenne and Wyatt also rising to capture that cowboy mystique. But in general, when we choose place names, and Madison, you could argue, is a place name, London, Paris, all of these names.
China for girls, India I've heard a fair amount lately.
Savannah is another popular one.
Pretty.
All of these names are familiar because they are on the globe, but yet they haven't been common as children's names. So it's a way to bring new names into use with keeping some groundedness and some familiarity.
I'm looking here at the top boys' names for last year, 2006, and I have to say they don't seem all that out of the familiar. Jacob, Michael, Joshua, Ethan, Matthew, Daniel, Christopher, Andrew, Anthony, William. Do those sound familiar just because I'm part of our cultural moment, or are these more conservative than the girls' names, or are we really that far afield from tradition there?
We've always been more conservative with boys' names, but that list is a little more creative than you might think at first glance. You see names like Jacob and Ethan, and you think, oh, a biblical name. But 50 and 100 years ago, the popular biblical names for Christian boys were all New Testament names. You're named John and James. You're not named Jacob and Ethan.
But if you go back even further, I've got lots of Levi and Amos and Old Testament names way back in the Christian naming vein.
If you go back to Puritan times, Old Testament names were very much in fashion. But 30, 40 years ago, a pair of brothers named Joshua and Ethan would have sounded pretty solidly Jewish. Mm-hmm. Today, they're just as likely to be evangelical Christians in Montana.
All over the map there. Let's take a call from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and Brenna. Brenna, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you see, Brenna? I'm looking at your name here at babynamewizard.com, invisible in 1968, and pretty darn popular in 2003, Brenna. How have you liked it?
Yes, well, as I was explaining when I called earlier, it was kind of a bummer as a little kid that I couldn't get personalized notebooks or we had a big popular sticker in my school. It was property of, and it would say, you know, Scott or Emily or Susan.
Right, no little pre-stamped license plates for you.
Exactly. So my grandmother was good about it, though. She would always get me things with my middle name, which is Alicia, so that was available.
Yeah, and so on balance, are you happy with Brenna or not?
No, I am very happy. As I've gotten older, I've learned to appreciate it a lot more. And I do think that having a unique name has sort of helped shape my character. And I'm grateful for that. Also grateful that my mom didn't go with her second choice, which was Sunshine.
It shaped your character, what, made you tougher, more independent, more willing to think in your own way?
I think all of those things, yeah, for sure. And, you know, even though it gets mangled into Brenda, and now a lot of it gets mangled into Brianna as that becomes more popular, I get complimented on it just as much as it gets mangled.
And if it's more easily Googleable to you, is that a good thing or not?
It is having my own business, and I don't mind people finding me because usually people looking for me know me from my past or for a good reason.
Yeah, Brenna, beautiful. Thanks very much and good luck to you. Laura, what do you say in this name story?
Well, Brenna's parents definitely hit the jackpot. When she was born, that name was almost unheard of. Brenda would have probably been the more common option, but we're streamlining everything today. So Jennifer now becomes Jenna, and Brenna is rising.
Wow. Let's take a call from Candy. Candy with a C in Norfolk, Massachusetts. You're on the air. Hi, Candy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. I just want to make the comment that although I know parents want their child to be unique, and I think every parent thinks their child is cute and adorable, if you saddle a child with a name like mine, Candy Heart.
Heart is your name or your maiden name? Or
Heart is my maiden name.
So your parents did that on purpose, Candy Heart.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And because they, you know, they thought I was cute and adorable, but when you get out into the world, it makes it hard sometimes for people to take you seriously with a name like Candy Heart, or actually even some of the other names like Summer or Dawn.
What about just Candy on its own? I'm looking here at the chart. It took off like a rocket in the 30s, fell like a stone in about the year 2000. What about Candy? You're not Candy Heart now. You've moved on from that surname, I guess, but what about Candy alone itself?
I also think Candy is kind of a saddle. I think it... people make a lot of comments, oh, you must be sweet, oh, you know, all kinds of, you know, it actually I've heard had people say things like, oh, that's a stripper's name. And
hard to be taken seriously in a way then, or maybe.
I think so, yeah.
Candy, we wish you the best of luck and good luck to you. You sound very substantial, right? Laura, what do you say to Candy?
It's hard when you're expecting a baby to realize that you're not just expecting a baby, you're expecting a person. Very often I'll hear parents say, oh, I like the name Matilda, but goodness, that's too much for a little girl. Well, she won't be little for long. And that's what happens to cute names and to nicknames often that are given as full names. There comes a time in our life when we might yearn for something more formal.
Let's bring another voice into this conversation from Rockville, Maryland. We're joined by Brett Pelham. He's a psychology professor at the State University of New York at Buffalo. His work is focused on social perception, and he's found some really interesting trends on the impact of naming a child this or that. Brett Pelham, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your research and the connection between what names we're given and where we end up in this world.
I guess I would start by saying my research is relevant to what you all have been talking about today, including the popularity of this show. I heard a lot of really interesting calls from people who talked about their names, and one of the sort of core linchpins of my research is that names are a huge symbol of who we are. So our names really matter to us, and parents spend endless weeks and months sometimes trying to choose a perfect name for their kids because names are such an important symbol of who we are.
What's the proof that they really are an important symbol, the proof that they matter?
My work takes a very different direction than the kind of things that people have mentioned. I think those things are true, so it is hard to be taken seriously with certain kinds of names at times. I've looked more at the unconscious consequences of people's names for things like career decisions and deciding on a choice of a place in which to live. So, for example, my research has shown that over about the past 60 years or so, women named Georgia are disproportionately likely to move to the state of Georgia, and women named Virginia gravitate toward Virginia. Women named Louise gravitate toward Louisiana.
You're kidding. I mean, that just sounds so improbable, but it's definitely there.
It does sound improbable. It sounds a little crazy, but the basic idea is that might be based on a healthy tendency, which is the tendency that most people have to really like their name. So it's been really well documented for years that most people, there are some exceptions, of course, really like their names.
I've even seen in your research, I think, that if you go to Milwaukee, you're going to find more Mildreds.
Yes, and even controlling for the fact that Mildred is an older name rather than a younger name, at least was at the time that we did the study. So controlling for basic demographic questions like, well, how popular is this name and how populated is that area, people do seem to gravitate towards cities and states that resemble their first and their last name.
So name a child China, and you may not see her once she grows up.
She may not disappear, but she's going to be more interested in taking that vacation to China someday, is what I would say. Yeah, she's probably, Venus Williams is not likely to move to the planet Venus anytime soon. But if there's a convenient place, it becomes more attractive to you.
You also take this to professions that people choose.
Yeah, we don't have as much data there. The data are much harder to get, but we have shown that there's at least a weak tendency for people with DEN names, for example, to gravitate toward dentistry. And my favorite example of that is a dentist in Los Angeles, very close to where I once lived, named Dennis Smiler. So,
and he's a dentist. So if you're Dennis or Denise, get out the little...
You're more likely to be a dentist than you would be if you had some other equally common name.
So,
yeah.
So I guess what you're showing us there is that the nameplate we wear, it shows ourselves to others, but it also leads us, in a sense, in a certain direction.
Very much, because most people like their names. We like things that remind us of our names. And in fact, our research has shown that those tendencies are probably most pronounced if you're not aware of what you're doing. So if you stop and say, wait a minute, am I moving to Georgia because my name is Georgia? You'd say, well, that's a crazy reason. But if you think it's just an interesting coincidence, it would seem much more appealing to you.
Laura Wattenberg, what do you see in Dr. Pelham's research?
There's no question that most adults, in any case, like their names. There's a cycle that most of us go through. Most 12-year-olds hate their names. So if you're Catherine, you become Katie, for instance. But by the time you're an adult, which is the people who are choosing where to live and what to do with their lives, most of us have come around to the idea that our parents had some good ideas after all.
Let's hear from those who have been named. Jamil is calling from Boston. Jamil, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What do you have?
Well, my middle name is Jamil, and it's an Arabic name. I think it's a boy's Arabic name, and it's spelled J-A-M-I-L, but I spell it J-A-M-E-E-L. My first name, though, is Mumtaz, M-U-M-T-A-Z. It's very common in India, but I'm not Indian. Nobody in my family's Indian. I don't know anybody who's Indian. And I was raised in a very conservative part of Middle America, where, Mumtaz was just this incredibly foreign word and nobody could pronounce it. Nobody knew if I was a boy or a girl.
So Mumtaz, Jamil, and which did you go by?
Well, I went by Mumtaz up until I was about 13, and then I made the conscious decision to tell people my name is Jamil.
But these names were not race or culture or religion-based in any way?
No, my father apparently knew somebody who was Arabic, who told him what the names meant, because in India, Mumtaz has a whole story. Mumtaz Mahal, the man who built the Taj Mahal, his wife was named Mumtaz. And
yes.
There's a whole story there. And, you know, he thought that story was fabulous, and he gave me the name. And then before I was even born, and before they knew if I was a boy or a girl, and the man, I guess, who told him about it said, well, if it's a boy, name him Jamil, because that means most handsome.
Were your parents, I don't know, hippies or seekers? Or
My father was a total hippie. My mom was very conservative, and they got divorced when I was about 4 or 5. So then we moved away from, I was born in Los Angeles. We moved away to St. Louis, Missouri, and I grew up in an extremely conservative county of suburb of St. Louis. And I grew up with all the Jennifers and Kristens and, you know, all the...
So how was it to be Mumtaz Jamil in that town?
It was horrible. I mean, I was considered a very weird, geeky person. I thought of myself that way. Whenever I was introduced to anybody, it was like, oh, this is Mumtaz. And people look at me and they'd say, oh, okay. And they kind of just turn their eyes away, or they'd look down.
Oh, jeez.
But the minute I changed my name to Jamil, my whole world changed.
In what direction? How? What?
Hi, this is Jamil. Oh, Jamil, what an interesting name. Oh, that's a pretty name. Where does it come from? Jamil. And I could tell it wasn't even, no one knew it was a foreign name or a cultural name or anything. People were able to pronounce Jamil. People were able to, when they heard you say Jamil, they understood what you were saying. And there was immediate, like, oh, well, that's, I can kind of get what that is. Well,
did they assume you were Muslim American or black Muslim?
Nobody where I grew up from even knew, you know, who a Jewish person was, much less a Muslim person. I mean, it was a very, very, you know, Catholic, German,
out there.
Irish,
okay.
You know? Yeah. So when I moved to Boston, which was many, many years later, I'm going to be 40 this year.
I already knew that because Jamil totally spiked in popularity in about 1970-something. So.
Yeah, but it was probably with boys.
Yeah, yes,
and,
entirely.
I meet a lot of people now who say, oh, that's my son's name, or that's my, you know, uncle's name or whatever. And I have my license. I'm very proud of Mumtaz, and I always tell people, you know, my
birth
name is Mumtaz if you want to, use it. But I don't ever introduce myself with the Mumtaz because I get a huge difference. I get a huge difference with the reactions of people.
We hear that child at your side. Mumtaz, yeah. Jamil, what did you name your child or children?
Well, that was interesting because my husband's name is Mike Davis, and he never has to spell it for anybody. He never has any issues. And when I promise myself when I name my son, it's going to be something where he's never going to have to spell it. He's never going to have an issue, and I wanted to name him Alex. And my husband thought that was just horrible. It wasn't unique in any way. We just had huge debates over it.
So what'd you do?
Quentin, with a Q, Quintin. And I look at that name and I'm like, oh, that's a beautiful name. At the time, I thought it was a little too unusual. I didn't want it to be mixed up with Quentin Tarantino. But now I'm like, oh, and his middle name is Alexander.
And how old is your child?
He's 3 now.
3 now. Okay, I can tell you that... that you named him Quentin at the same time as a whole lot of other people. I'm looking at the chart online, and in about 2002, Quentin went off the charts. But that's a great tale of names generation to generation. We appreciate it. Let me get one more here from Augusta, Georgia. Mary Jane, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi
Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Three things. One of my friends, her name is Crystal Gale, and her sister's name is Loretta Lynn, and it goes like this throughout her family. It's all country stars names.
Are they the stars themselves or named after stars?
Named after. Crystal Gale, Loretta Lynn, and that kind of stuff. They all have a good sense of humor about it, though. But my name is Mary Jane, and when I meet people, the connotations that come with Mary Jane, whether it's the shoe or the candy or the drug, without fail, either someone will smile and kind of wink at me, or else I'll start singing all the different songs that are named Mary Jane. And it's pretty interesting because I feel like it doesn't really quite so much reflect on me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more how they react to it. It's just, and for me, I was named after the Mother Mary. I'm Catholic, and
mm-hmm.
then I'm named after my mother, Jane. So
but
Mary
it gives
Jane.
You a quick insight into the person you're speaking with, their
Correct.
Response.
Yes.
That is interesting.
And also, I'm originally from Illinois, and then coming down to the South, I've heard different names here. For instance, for a boy's name, Tripp, T-R-I-P-P, or Colt, C-O-L-T, kind of going back with the Tennessee kind of names. But I was wondering, do you see more of a regional kind of naming going on as far as North, South, you know, Upper East?
That's interesting. Mary Jane in Augusta, let us look at it. Laura, what about the regionality of names? Colt, Tripp. I don't know, Chance.
there are definitely microclimates of style that the community you're in is likely to have more in common with you, but they're not always what you might think. So, for instance, conservative Christian names with a clear gender identity are actually most common in the most liberal blue areas of
America. Such as?
So Peter, Margaret, these would be very liberal names.
These days?
Today. Mm-hmm. Whereas, ironically, names that are androgynous, new, even pagan, like Dakota or Ashlyn, are the most conservative names.
Huh. Brett Pelham, is there geography, apart from pulling Georgia to Georgia, does geography show up or regionality show up in your research?
I think Laura knows a lot more about that than I do. I do know about a little bit of pilot work I've done to show that to show something very consistent with what Laura said earlier, which is this general tendency toward individualism, the age of individualism mm-hmm. that she referred to. And I've seen a tendency for people to be more willing to give their kids common names in the Southeast, where it's a slightly more collectivistic part of the country, than in, say, the Great Plains states, where there are wide open spaces and there's even more focus on individualism. But that's not something that I know has been really well studied in the scientific community. Maybe Laura studied it for her purposes.
Let's take a call from Valentina from Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Valentina, you're on the air.
Hi, good day. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have three children that we have named, and the significance for the first two were biblical, but also because we wanted them to have names that would hopefully reflect how they would be for the future.
Let's hear them.
Our older son is Tyler, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's the tile maker and, you know, real crafty, and he has become quite artistic. And then our daughter Jordan, who we spell with a Y instead of an A, J-O-R-D-Y-N.
Okay.
We did that in the sense so that, you know, even though, you know, it's kind of a boy-girl name sense,
mm-hmm.
it's after the Jordan River, but we wanted it to be where when people saw it visually, they might be able to signify that it's a girl's name as opposed to a boy's
because
name.
Because of the Y, and it sets her apart a little bit. All right, what about your third?
Our third one is Chayton, and this one is a bit unusual.
Spell that.
C-H-A-Y-T-O-N.
Okay.
And, you know, it kind of goes to that Aiden kind of sense, but
it has
nothing to do with our decision. It was more based upon, it's a cultural name. It's like a Native American. I want to say Cherokee for Falcon. And, you know, we kind of wanted a unique name because this was an unexpected, it wasn't a totally planned pregnancy. And so we wanted it to be very unique as our being our last child.
All right, I'm going to give you the prize of the day, Valentina, because babynamewizard.com, Chayton is the first thing I've typed in today that does not show up at all. So you've hit the jackpot on the specific uniqueness. Do you have any Cherokee in your family, in your background?
You know, there's like probably just a pinprick in our ancestral lines.
Any Falconers?
Never really elaborated on.
Any Falconers in your background? I mean, why does the fact that it means, you know, falcon?
I wanted something that would be, you know, of a cultural sense, but also kind of a spiritual sense. And to me, that name just kind of stuck out. And coincidentally enough, I have not been able to find that name in the baby book ever again.
Valentina, you may have it. Thanks very much for that. Laura Wattenberg, here's one more story. And, you know, it's its own story, like everyone we've heard today. At the same time, it falls right in line with that kind of Aiden, whether intentional or not. It's part of a collective story.
I'm happy to say that the name Chayton is in the Baby Name Wizard book.
Oh, okay. But, maybe I spelled it wrong.
No, it's not. In the name Voyager. It's an uncommon name, but probably the single most common Native American name for boys today. So it's interesting hearing that mother say, well, the sound of it had nothing to do with it. I chose it because it's a Native American name. But yet, since it does match the sound of our times, that speaks to us, and that one name from its culture is starting to pop up across America.
And what about the literal meaning of names? Does it seem to matter to people? I mean, if it means falcon in Cherokee,
I think people
or high
like
German.
People like to look up a name and find that it has a positive connotation, because that's then a story you can tell your child about why you chose it. But very seldom do people actually start with the meaning. And there are plenty of popular names today with names that, with meanings that aren't so attractive. So Cameron, for instance, is very fashionable, but it actually means crooked nose.
You happy with your name, Laura? Or in all this research, do you wish you had something a little more exotic?
I think my parents did a terrific job. Thanks.
Laura Wattenbrug, it sounds good to me. We're so grateful to you for being here. Author of The Baby Name Wizard, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Brett Pelham at the University of New York at Buffalo, thanks for State University. Thanks for your research, and thank you for joining us, Mr. Pelham.
Thank you so much.
To all those names out there, good luck. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.